Celebrating 25 years on the air. This is Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat on 96.1 WSBT. The sports leader.
Notre Dame has defeated Louisville 104-101 in five overtimes.
Run! Brian Stavisky! It's the ball game and the Irish will play for another day!
But to the Notre Dame family, I can't say anything except I've been blessed.
The Penn Kingsmen, 5A, state champs.
I think anytime you have a team with Skylar Diggins at the point, you better not count us out.
The Indianapolis Colts select Quentin Nelson.
Charlie Weiss's tenure as Notre Dame's football coach has come to an end.
South Bend, Washington has etched its name into Hoosier Hysteria history.
Out of the 160 minor league teams, South Bend will be the best.
Three and he hits. Demetrius Jackson.
Score, Marshawn! 4-2 Bruins.
Brian Kelly, the new head coach at Notre Dame.
Score! Notre Dame, 3.7 seconds away from a spot in the national championship game.
The Clay Colonials win the state championship. They are living a dream.
Enrique Ogunbowale wins the national championship for Notre Dame.
Your hosts are Eric Hansen and Darren Pritchett.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to Sports Beat from 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. Eric Hansen is the Fighting Irish football insider for the South Bend Tribune. He's in our WSBT studios today. I'm Darren Pritchett with the South Bend Cubs in Burlington, Iowa. Our game tonight against the Bees, the Angels affiliate, has already been rained out. We will play a doubleheader tomorrow. First pitch at 6 o'clock South Bend time here on WSBT Radio. So only a 5 o'clock hour on Sports Beat tomorrow night. So we will have CBS Sports Radio coming up following Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat tonight. Well, on the program this evening, after we take care of our quick hitters, we're going to look ahead to the 2020 NFL Draft. What Notre Dame players have the best opportunity to be drafted? Eric has put together a list of defenders and offensive players, and there are a couple of guys you don't know if they're going to be back or not, or go to the NFL Draft. We'll talk about all those scenarios coming up in just a little bit. Addison Russell trying to come back from his 40-game suspension for violating Major League Baseball's domestic violence policy. That suspension ends May 3rd, and he has been, I don't want to say rehabbing at AAA Iowa, but he's been preparing, I guess, for a call back up to the Chicago Cubs by spending some time at AAA Iowa. And now there's another twist to this story, possibly. We'll touch on that in just a couple of moments. Also, we've got the My 5 question of the day in about 40 minutes. As an Associated Press voter, if Eric had the opportunity to create a top 5 using only teams from the Notre Dame football upcoming schedule, who would make the top 5? Rapid fire, I will update my National League power rankings. Will the Dodgers still be number 1 in the National League? Stick around, we'll have that answer for you in just a little bit. Here on WSBT Radio, Sports Beat brought to you by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds. By Train Heating and Cooling. By the Food Bank of Northern Indiana. Hunger is a story we can end. Find out how at feedindiana.org. And by Lechleitner Door Sales and Service. At Lechleitner, they open all the right doors. Eric, how are you?
I'm doing good, and my 2 cents worth is that Cody Bellinger should be number one. Not a specific team, just Cody. At the top
most
of your power
rating. RBI in National League history in the month of April. He is off to a terrific start. It's the Christian Yelich, Corey Bellinger race for the MVP right now in the National League. Both are off to unbelievable starts. Well, I can give you some good news. Okay. I'm sitting here in Burlington, Iowa, and it's no longer raining. When we traveled from South Bend to Burlington today, we had rain the entire way. And it has finally let up over the last little bit. There's a lot of water here in Burlington, and the rivers we went by are overflowing, to say the least, including the old Mississippi. So it is, boy, they had a ton of rain here in Iowa. Watching the radar, they've had some heavy rain nonstop. So we're not going to have any baseball tonight. I assume it's still raining in South Bend. You got a ways to go yet.
It's been on and off. It is on right now.
Okay, well, I can tell you it is eventually going to stop raining because it has finally stopped raining here in Burlington, but no chance to play tonight. The field was very, very soggy here in Burlington, Iowa, so we will try to play a doubleheader tomorrow. Now, there's supposed to be some rain in the forecast, so we'll see how that all plays out. All right, let's get the program started officially with today's quick hitters.
Be quick, but don't hurry.
It's time for Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beats Quick Hitters.
Life moves pretty fast.
From 96.1 WSBT.
Let's go while we're young.
Let's start things off with some Indianapolis Colts news. Colts football once again on WSBT radio this fall. Well, the Colts announced today they have signed 27-year-old running back Spencer Ware. Ware rushed for 1,580 yards and 11 touchdowns in his first four seasons in the National Football League. The first year was Seattle, the last three with Kansas City. The LSU product was a sixth-round pick of Seattle 5 years ago, and he will compete against Marlon Mack and Nyheim Hines for playing time in the Colts' backfield. Now, many of the draft gurus, in fact, most believe that Chris Ballard had another home run draft. He put together a terrific draft last year. His first two picks turned out to be all-pro starters, including Notre Dame's offensive guard, Quentin Nelson. And many believe that, well, he's done it again. As he traded out of the first round, he ended up with three second-round picks. And many believe all three have a chance to challenge for a starting spot right away. The most significant is the corner that they needed, Rocky Asin out of Temple. They got the edge rusher, Ben Benagu, and a speedy wide receiver. Great deep threat for Andrew Luck and wide receiver Paris Campbell. So the Colts were 1-5 last year. They ended up 10-6 in the postseason. So, Eric, right now, are the Indianapolis Colts the team to beat in the AFC House, or the AFC South, with houses, I should say, Tennessee, Houston, and Jacksonville?
Well, I saw a tweet that Mel Kiper thinks because of their draft, they are going to the Super Bowl.
Hello.
I thought that was interesting. I'll tell you what excited me more than Spencer Ware signing with them is that Quentin Nelson had Chris Ballard give him the phone numbers of the new rookies to tell him what would be expected of them. So based on that, I like the Colts to win their division.
So he wasn't being mean, he was being helpful.
He was being helpful, but probably intimidating too.
I noticed he tweeted at Trey Wingo of ESPN. Wingo wore a suit coat that was very similar to something that Quentin had worn earlier in a picture for something. And so he put the pictures side by side. So we're seeing a new Quentin Nelson, a little more ha-ha side to him. Not so serious. Good to see.
That is good to see. He's, you know, we were having kind of the conversation in the office the other day. Who is the best Notre Dame player in the NFL right now? Well, and I kind of argued that Harrison Smith was it, right? Who'd you go with?
I go with Quentin.
Okay.
He's the most dominant guard in the NFL. Maybe Zach Martin has an argument. He's a Notre Dame guy, too.
Well, I put Harrison because of that he's done it year after year after year. There's nothing that would suggest that Quentin won't do that. I think Quentin will eventually move up to that spot. I said Harrison, but I thought Quentin. And then I think Zach Martin has to be in the conversation just because he's been to the Pro Bowl every year as well. But I think Harrison is still an ascending player. But tell Quentin that I said Quentin, please.
Okay. Well, you make a fine argument. Harrison deserves as much as anybody to be at the top of this list. But just the way Quentin dominated and that one video right, where he's screaming and knocking the guy down and then ended up getting fined because after all that thing going viral where everybody's watching it, they realize, well, that's a helmet-to-helmet hit. And ended up getting fined over it. But he both had tremendous years, and it's fun arguing between the two. But the answer to most of my questions is Quentin Nelson on anything okay, like that. My Heisman Trophy winner and the guy you voted for, right, third in the Heisman Trophy.
Right.
All right. Colts are the team to beat in the AFC South. I'm not sure Houston did enough defensively. Tennessee, Mariota can't stay healthy. Jacksonville with Nick Foles, let's see. But they had to cut a few players that were key parts to their defense. So I'm thinking the Colts right now look awfully good. Their schedule is challenging, but they are the team to beat. Let's move to baseball. The Chicago Cubs were idle last night. Tonight at 10:10, they will play in Seattle against those Red Hot Mariners. A couple of old Grizzly veterans are going to square off. The Cubs go with their lefty, Cole Hamels. And for Seattle, right-hander Felix Hernandez, who is not the same pitcher he was a couple of years ago. He has really taken a step back. I think Father Time has caught up to Felix just a little bit, and Seattle never took advantage of one of the more dominant pitchers of his generation. Well, the Chicago White Sox were taking on the Baltimore Orioles on the south side of Chicago last night, and boy, did they use their power bats against the Orioles.
Got Alonso, jacks this ball to right field, and it does have an uplift, and it's gone. A buzzsaw to right field, and it's 2-0.
That's a better hit baseball than the Sox had in five strong innings in Baltimore.
Tim drills it left field. Smith at the wall. It is gone.
That's called a high change, and high changes do just that. The Orioles continue to throw home runs, and Tim Anderson continues his ascent toward Player of the Month in the American League. That's his sixth. He's driven in 18, and the Sox have a three-run lead.
Well, that was Jason Benetti and Steve Stone on NBC Sports Chicago, as it was a solid victory by the White Sox over the Orioles, 5-3. A little food for thought. The Orioles have allowed 73 home runs so far this year. The next closest, 51. They have given up 22 more home runs than anybody else in Major League Baseball. That's a rebuilding team and an awfully ugly number. And how about Manny Banuelos? 5 2/3 innings for the good guys. 5 hits, 2 earned runs, 6 strikeouts, a 2.70 ERA so far this year. Now, 2 notes on the White Sox. Their game tonight against the Orioles rained out at Guaranteed Rate Field. They will play a doubleheader tomorrow on the south side of Chicago. Ivan Nova was the scheduled starter for tonight. But maybe even more important news for Chicago White Sox fans, since Eloy Jimenez has graduated to the majors, although on the injured list right now, one of the top prospects in the Sox system got promoted today. And it was about time. He was due. Luis Robert, the young man from Cuba, only 21 years old, an outfielder. This is what he was doing at Advanced Day Winston-Salem. 19 games, 75 at-bats. He was hitting .453. With a .512 on base percentage, a .920 slugging percentage on base, and slugging 1.432. That is Herculean. And so, with 8 homers and 24 RBI along the way, Luis Robert has been promoted to Double A Birmingham. And so, once you get to Double A, then the majors, not too far off. The old saying is, if you can handle Double A pitching, you are ready for Major League Baseball. So, very important there. Luis Robert going from Advanced A to Double A in the Chicago White Sox system. Definitely an outfielder to watch for the White Sox to eventually play alongside Eloy Jimenez. The South Bend Cubs rained out tonight in Burlington, so how about a doubleheader tomorrow? It'll be a 5:45 pregame and a 6 o'clock first pitch. Here in Burlington against the Bees, the Angels affiliate, Burlington 14-10, South Bend 13-10. The Cubs have won a season high 3 in a row and are a season best 3 games over .500 at 13-10. And those are our quick hitters for tonight. Coming up next, we'll project Notre Dame players in the 2020 NFL Draft. It's never too early. Mel Kiper has his top picks already. So let's think ahead. Who might be selected early representing the Fighting Irish in 2020? That's next as SportsBeat continues, brought to you by Trane Heating and Cooling, the Food Bank of Northern Indiana, Lechleitner Door Sales and Service, and Budweiser. Thank you very much, Abby. Eric Hansen, the Fighting Irish football insider for the South Bend Tribune, back in our WSBT studios. I'm Darren Pritchett, traveling with the South Bend Cubs. We are in Burlington, Iowa, where they caucus. That's right. Am I not mistaken? This is a caucus state?
It is.
The first one. The thing that gets everything started. I think our mayor was here recently. So we are here in Burlington, Iowa, hoping for Doubleheader baseball tomorrow at 6 o'clock on WSBT Radio, but a very good chance of rain again tomorrow and a very good chance of rain on Thursday. So we may not play a game here in Burlington. That's very, very possible, but we stay at a hotel with many things to do. So if you're going to be stuck out playing baseball, yeah, this is actually a resort, and there is a water park on one side. There is like an entertainment area with video games and a bowling alley. And then there are bar restaurants to watch sports in. And then there's a little casino on the other side of the hotel, which I can't imagine any of our players will be at later tonight. I can't imagine any of them would go down that road to that particular facility.
Is there a magic cornfield nearby?
You know, there is not. And I actually asked how close we were to the Field of Dreams in Iowa. And Paul McAnulty, our assistant coach, hitting coach, used to be a coach here in Burlington. And he said it's about 3.5 hours away, so not close at all.
Gotcha.
Unfortunately. Let's talk some football. Yesterday, we recapped the 2019 NFL draft involving Notre Dame football players. Let's peek ahead a year from now. 2020 NFL draft. So we'll look at this a couple of different ways. We'll break it down, offense and defense for Notre Dame. Seniors that will be available in the draft, also the possibility of some early entries. So let's just start with the guys we know that will be eligible on the offensive side of the football. And the two seniors are wide receivers Chase Claypool and Chris Fink. Now, Fink is a guy that probably has some challenges in front of him to be a guy taken in this draft or in the middle rounds. Chase Claypool, though, is an interesting physical specimen. I think we're waiting for the consistency from Claypool. And, Eric, if that happens this year, I would have to imagine NFL teams will look at Chase Claypool a whole lot different because some of the intangibles he appears to have.
Yeah, I had a conversation with Scott Wright last week of DraftCountdown.com and a draft analyst. And I asked him, I said, who's the most intriguing draft pick, not the best, but the most intriguing? And he said Claypool. And he actually said he would draft Claypool ahead of Miles Boykin. He said right now, as just a special teams player, he would be a third or fourth rounder. He's that
no
good
kidding.
At special teams. And wow. Then what he could be as a receiver could push him up into a first rounder. Now, again, that's a big if, you know. But remember, when we went into last year, Boykin, Love, Tranquil, and Dexter were not probables to get drafted, certainly not as high as they got drafted. And so a lot of things changed. So we're projecting that Chase is going to have the year everybody thinks he can have. And if he does in the fall what he did in the spring, he's on his way.
What about Fink? I know the Clemson wide receiver gets compared a lot to him, the former
Hunter
walk-on.
Renfro.
Yeah, Hunter Renfro. Now, I believe he got drafted, didn't
he? Yes, he did.
So, when you think about Chris Fink, he made a big jump last year, Eric. I know he told me before the Cotton Bowl when I asked him about what he worked on in the offseason to take him to the next level. And he talked about working with a strength, I believe, in Houston, and it really helped him get out of breaks better, which made him a more effective route runner. And with his speed, you get him in the open field, he can do a lot of damage.
He sure can. And he had a tremendous spring. And he was one of those guys where you looked at him in the blue-gold game and went, meh. But we saw seven other full practices, and he was not meh in any of them. He looked like an improved player. Now, again, I want to see him against a really good nickel from somebody else's defense, because Notre Dame didn't exactly have a great nickel to throw at him in spring. But when he even played against, you know, Troy Pride or somebody like that, he was just a handful to deal with in drills, a handful to deal with in 11-on-11 and 7-on-7 periods. So I think there's a chance for him if he, again, takes it up another notch. He could be a late-round pick. And, you know, he's a guy that can do some returns, although he has not been a dynamic returner. He's been a reliable, you know, good set of hands. So I wouldn't write him off. But, you know, this year is very important for Chris in terms of his pro, you know, whether he wants to go pro. He just doesn't have the size.
Sure. All right, so as we look ahead to the 2020 NFL draft, as we stick to the offensive side of the football for the Irish, let's look beyond the senior class, always the possibility for early entries. We had a couple of this year. So let's just start at the quarterback position. Ian Book, if he has an improved season, if he takes a couple of steps forward, could we be having a conversation, Ian Book, headed to the NFL draft, considering Tua's coming from Alabama? Justin Herbert is considered a top two or three quarterback, the young man from the University of Oregon. Does it make sense, if all that happens, for Book to take a look at the NFL? Or is he one of those guys you just feel like he should play throughout his entire eligibility in college because he could be one heck of a college quarterback, and let's see what happens when he gets to the point of going to the NFL.
Well, if he waits to 2021 and plays out his eligibility, Trevor Lawrence will be in that draft and some other pretty good guys too, like Justin Fields, conceivably. So there's always going to be pretty good guys coming out, except the year that Kaiser decided to jump into the draft. But I talked to Dane Brugler from The Athletic about Book because I was really interested in what the pros, what the buzz was with him right now. And again, he said, you know, what Ian Book has done to this point is create some interest. And that's kind of where it sits. Now, whether he is a draftable quarterback, whether he's a highly coveted draftable quarterback, depends on how he plays this year. Last year doesn't matter. And what we saw in the spring, we saw a better version of Ian Book. And so certainly I think if you're somebody from the NFL, you're going to be watching the Georgia game because you'd say, okay, well, Clemson didn't turn out so well for him. How is he going to go against Georgia with this better version of himself? And with a good surrounding cast, he's going to have a better line than he had last year. He's going to have really good receivers, maybe not the game-breaking running back, but maybe Javar Armstrong will be that guy. So he's going to, and he certainly has tight ends. So that's, I think, going to be where we start to see and create buzz, whether Ian Book starts moving up into a higher conversation or if he's just kind of a draftable guy. I think at this point, if Ian Book has the kind of season he believes he's capable of having, he will come out. He will not come back for fifth year.
Interesting. On our list, we have Javar Armstrong, the running back. Eric, I look at this a couple of different ways. He's still a bit of a newbie at the running back position.
Right.
Played last year, first game, running back, 2 touchdowns against Michigan, had injury concerns. Hey, we always talk about if you're a running back with high-end talent, that's one position where going to the NFL quickly makes a lot of sense because you got a lot of tread left on your tires. If you don't, then, you know, a lot of times NFL teams will look down upon you, quite frankly. So having a lot of tread on the tires could help Javar Armstrong. But, Eric, I know C.J. Procise made a quick transition to the running back position, had a great run at Notre Dame, drafted by Seattle. Injuries have really not allowed him to show his full potential. Is it too quick to talk about Jafar going to the NFL after just 2 years as a running back? Because, hey, let's face it, a lot of guys in college, they come out early because they have all that experience in high school. Does that matter at all with Armstrong?
I don't think it matters with him. And again, he's in a similar position to where CJ was when CJ came out. Now, CJ was an early entry, and Jafar would be too in the same boat. They would have their degree. You know, they will have been four-year college students, just not coming back for a fifth year. But again, he has to have the kind of year C.J. Procise had as a senior, which was a 1,000-yard rushing year. Does he have it in him? He looked at like that on certain days, and he's going to have a pretty good line in front of him. You know, when I had a chance to talk to him late in the spring, and talked to Brian Kelly, too. They both talked about how much better his vision was, that he can kind of see gaps and he can see places to make cuts. Whereas last year, he kind of was running with blinders on. You know, he's just kind of running straight ahead and, you know. But the thing is, I mean, I think people forget this is a guy that was a Kansas State sprint champion in multiple events. And so and came to Notre Dame as a wide receiver. And I think they forget that. And yet he's at 220 pounds, and moves really well. So obviously there's got to be a step up in his play. But one of the things I asked Brian Kelly after the Blue Gold game is, do you see the potential for him to be in the Dexter, Josh Adams kind of lineage with that kind of production? And he said, absolutely.
Well, he has a lot of versatility, so important in the National Football League today. This is going to be a very interesting season for him. If he breaks out, you're right, he could be off to the NFL, and that would be quite a surge from where he was 2 years ago at this time. All right, let's focus on two more offensive players, and then we'll take care of maybe the defense tomorrow. Let's go to the offensive line. How funny. A year ago at this time, we're wondering, wow, Liam Eichenberg, he's going to be a first-year starting left tackle. How's this going to go? Well, as the season went on, Eric, he was as solid as anybody along the offensive line. In fact, I don't know, does anybody ask questions about Eichenberg anymore? Because you know what you're going to get with the starting left tackle. We know the value of left tackles in the National Football League. I'm not sure if you have talked to Scott Wright from Draft Countdown about this. Does he project as a left tackle at the next level? Hey, if he's a right tackle, you can still make a good living. Ask Ronnie Stanley about that. Mike McGlinchey this year played right tackle until he got moved around a little bit. So what about the status of Leon Eichenberg? Would you say it's a better than 50% chance he would go next year if all goes well this year?
I'm not sure. You know, I think he would have to be a first rounder. And, you know, Dane Brugler has his mock draft out, and Dane's is based on film study. It's not based on who was a five-star coming out of high school like a lot of these mocks have been, these 2020 mocks, which have been a little bit silly. But Liam, I mean, when you think about it, you look at Notre Dame's schedule last year, and he was blocking a lot of really talented players, Rashawn Gary and Chase Winovich from Michigan. He had to block Brian Burns from Florida State. I mean, the Austin or Cleland Farrell and Austin Bryant from Clemson. You know, it's quite a, you're talking about a lot of draft choices that he was blocking last year and got better as the season went on. Now, he, again, has to take another big step, but I think people are assuming that's going to happen. So if he's in that first round conversation, then he's going to have a decision to make. Yeah.
No question.
But if he is not, then I would assume he would come back for his fifth year and then try to move up just like Ronnie Stanley did from junior to senior year, just like Quentin Nelson did from junior to senior year, and McGlinchey from fourth to fifth year.
Okay, finally, on the offensive side of the football, as we look ahead to the 2020 NFL draft and who might be in the draft from Notre Dame, another possible early entry, and this is an interesting name. Tight end Cole Kmet. We saw Kyler Murray get picked ninth in the baseball draft and first in the football draft. That might be a little too high a standard for Cole Kmet, of course, but he is a heck of a baseball player, left-handed pitcher, but it looks like, Eric, his heart is being a football player.
His heart is being a football player. Now, it hasn't been written off that he won't return to baseball sometime later this spring if he's cleared, but that's still up in the air. But as far as football, you know, he was incredible some days during practice. He was just really, really difficult to deal with. And it's kind of the Cole Kmet we've been waiting to see. And a lot of the reason we didn't see it last year was high ankle sprain really early in the season and played with that. Came back probably too early, but he wanted to contribute and really wasn't himself into the Clemson game and then wasn't really used in the Clemson game. But he is, I think, going to be a better pro than Alize Mack. I think he's going to get drafted much higher than Alize Mack. Now, again, he may say, I want to stay in school. I want to go 4 years and try to be a first-round draft choice. But, again, he's going to be on the radar this year as long as he's healthy because he's going to be productive.
Okay, so Eichenberg, Kmet, Book, Armstrong, possible early entries to the 2020 NFL draft. You got the two seniors on offense, Claypool and Fink. Tomorrow's program, we'll take a look at the defensive side of the football. And boy, there are some seniors that have the possibility of being very intriguing for NFL teams. And there's one early entry. And a guy that moved schools in order to give himself a better chance to get to the NFL, could his time be after the 2019 season? We'll talk about all those things on tomorrow's program. But coming up next, there's a little different storyline that's developed with Addison Russell trying to come back from his Major League Baseball suspension and his employer, the Chicago Cubs. We'll explain this story coming up in just a moment as Sports Beat continues on your home of the Fighting Irish, 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. It is now about 16 minutes in front of the top of the hour. Eric Hansen, Fighting Irish football insider for the South Bend Tribune in our WSBT studios. I'm Darren Pritchett with the South Bend Cubs in Burlington, Iowa. Chicago Cubs shortstop Addison Russell, currently at AAA, sort of getting into game shape right now before he becomes eligible to rejoin the Chicago Cubs on May 3rd following a 40-game suspension. He was suspended for the final 11 games of last year and the first 29 games of this year for violating the Major League Baseball domestic violence policy. There's been a lot of debate whether the Cubs should have kept Addison Russell. There are many believe with the allegations from his former wife that the Cubs should have just let him go. Instead, Theo Epstein has talked a lot about this. And Theo has said, I understand why a lot of people don't understand why we're keeping Addison around. And he said before the season started, we feel like we can help him get to a better place as a human being. So we're going to put all our support behind him. And they have done that. There was a very awkward press conference at the start of spring training. Addison Russell, very scripted, very uncomfortable. Didn't come across very well, but let's be honest. I don't know how well a press conference like that can go with the storylines that were being talked about. Here's a little bit of a twist to this story. Now, this is an NBCSports.com report. Cheryl Ring, who works with Fangraphs, she is also a lawyer. Now, allegedly, let's make that very clear. Allegedly, she has spoken to a member of the media who says the Cubs privately instructed that person to lay off Russell, allegedly threatening reprisal. The Cubs, meanwhile, are approving stories that paint Russell in a positive light, particularly in terms of redemption. Now, others have said they have heard the same thing as Cheryl Ring of Fangraphs, including Mike Gianella, Baseball Prospectus. And this is a story that continues to unfold. Now, the Cubs dispute the report. They call it unfounded, that they have pressured media members not to write negative things about Addison Russell because they note, well, Russell was made available to the press last Thursday without preset conditions. But if you're a columnist, you don't have to go to a press conference to write a piece on Addison Russell. So I'm not sure how valuable that piece of information is to this entire situation. So, Eric, as a member of the media, now we mainly cover college sports, and things are handled differently collegiately compared to professional sports. Right. So let's point that out. But in general, from time to time, we get the opportunity to be around professional athletes. For example, I was around the Bruins and the Blackhawks in their locker rooms during the Winter Classic. And the setting is just totally different from the collegiate game. But just from a member of the media standpoint, and we cannot stress this enough, this is an alleged story, but a couple of people have said this is what they are hearing from members of the media. How do you take this?
Well, I think that those people are probably telling the truth, that there probably was a suggestion of some kind of reprisal in terms of limited access to something else in the future. I don't think it happens very often.
We saw it with Bradley just a few weeks ago in the NCAA tournament.
Yeah, we did, for something that was really ridiculous. Not purveying the Bradley brand.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
But I think it's real. I don't know how the Cubs do business. I haven't covered the Cubs in three decades. I could see that happening, and I don't know why the reporters would make it up. And I think it's disgusting. You know, I think that if you're going to roll him back out there as a player and that you're going to accept what's in his past and you're going to accept that he's taken the steps to improve himself as a human being and that you're going to help him along with that, then he's got to pay the price of what he did. He's got to live the life, you know, he's certainly got it much easier than allegedly his wife had it. So he's going to have to deal with that. And I don't think that you limit it. You know, if you're going to say you're playing Major League Baseball and you're a grown man and you're a professional, then you need to get out there and face the music. And so I don't agree with this tiptoeing around. Now, college kids and high school kids are different. And I'm not saying that in the context of this kind of crime, but in the context of, like, Notre Dame had some players arrested, and they did not want these players to speak to the media until their legal stuff had been resolved. You know, they didn't want them kind of speaking out of turn with that. Once they did, they were allowed to go in front of the media and tell their story. They were allowed to be asked questions. I don't think, certainly I wasn't threatened with, you know, hey, you need to take it easy on Dexter Williams or Tavon Coney or Max Redfield or whoever it happened to be. You know, that didn't happen. But I do think that this happens with certain organizations on different levels as far as threats. And so that doesn't surprise me.
Here's a couple of things. Let's recall the Cubs traded for Aroldis Chapman, who had a domestic violence allegation against him. And there was a moment at a game in 2016 where they played an improper song over the PA system as he came in from the bullpen that sort of ties into those allegations. It was a very bad look, and the Cubs apologized. When you think about Addison Russell, you know, this is a situation to me, Eric. I've mentioned this before, especially when we talk about these NFL situations. Ray Rice of the Baltimore Ravens was really the first example where we saw video of the violence taking place. And that changed everything. The Kansas City Chiefs player recently, you saw the video. It changed everything. The Cubs decided to put everything behind Addison Russell, and I understand going that direction. I don't know if there's a right or a wrong way. But, Eric, I think it's fair to say if there was video of these allegations,
right,
Addison Russell would not be on the Chicago Cubs. For whatever reason, in our decision-making as organizations, the video seems to be the one thing the teams run away from the player because it's cruel to look at. It is disgusting to look at. Just knowing there's an allegation is bothersome. But when you see it, that forces the teams to get rid of those individuals. And to me, if there's a video of what has been alleged by the ex-wife, there's no way he's a member of the team anymore. There's no way.
I was reading while, you know, we were in commercial, Melissa's allegations in print, and they're disgusting.
If there was video of that, would he be on the team?
If there was video and he was still on the team, there would be an incredible protest outside of Wrigley Field every night, and with justifiable reasons. There's no way. I don't think Theo would allow it.
I don't think so either. But that's kind of my point. Do we have to have video?
I certainly think it has to be. There has to be a conviction.
Absolutely. Yeah. Oh, sure. Right. Absolutely. Right. No question. Right. No question.
Right. I mean, allegations aren't enough because we've seen people make that up before. And
no question. Yes.
So, but, you know, as I'm looking through her testimony, there seems to be witnesses to a lot of these incidents. So I'm like, okay, where is all this headed and so forth? You know, where is Addison's head with this? And it would be, I think, meaningful for fans to hear how he genuinely feels. If he's just going to give rehearsed lines, then nobody's going to believe that. So I think he should be rolled out. And if it's a distraction, then that's what the Cubs are willing to take on by having this guy still on their roster.
And I think that's part of the discussion, how the players are going to embrace him, how they're going to deal with Addison coming back, because it will be the main story, unfortunately, for the other 24 players on the Chicago Cubs. All right, we'll sneak in the My 5 next on WSBT.
One question, five answers. This is the My 5 Question of the Day on Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT.
Eric is an Associated Press voter, so I ask him this question. If he had to create a top five using only teams from the Notre Dame football 2019 schedule, who would be in the ranking? Who would be number one? Let's find out. We'll start with number five.
I wrestled between Virginia and Boston College on this one. Went with Boston College. A.J. Dillon was my tiebreaker.
Ooh, good choice there. Outstanding running back. Number four.
I have USC here, and I think they could be a little bit better than this, or they could be much worse than this, because if things go south, they're going to get ugly in California.
Did you see the reports about Reggie Bush and Matt Leinart?
I did.
Already saying they will start recruiting Urban Meyer to come to USC if things go poorly in
SoCal.
And they
probably won't wait till the season's over.
No, they will not. I hear they have good retirement plans there at USC. Might be enticing for Urban and many players to come. Number three.
Number three, going with the Stanford Cardinal. I think they are going to be a top 25 team, even though they're not in a lot of the post-spring top 25s. I think they will be a top 25 team next year.
Using teams on the Notre Dame football schedule this fall, who are in the top five if Eric had to put together a ranking? Number two.
Number two, I'm going to go with Michigan, and I know a lot of Notre Dame fans aren't happy when they see Michigan ranked ahead of Notre Dame in these post-spring top 25s, and there's a few of them that are like that.
Tiebreaker could be Michigan is at home against Notre Dame this year, and many might feel Michigan's the favorite there. Could be as simple as that. All right, number one.
Number one, far and away, it's Georgia, and I think Georgia is a playoff team. I think they're going to get in this year, no matter what they do with their fake punting.
That's exactly right. And I saw one of the early mocks, two guys in the top 10 in the 2020 draft from Georgia. That's the My 5, and now we transition to what's coming up in tomorrow's South Bend Tribune Sports section.
Well, Scott Davidson has a feature on Mackenzie Griman. I hope that's her last name. From Penn, she's a softball player. IU Memorial Stadium would be selling beer and wine at the football games, Darren.
What school?
Indiana.
There you go.
And, of course, much, much more.
Will there be beer sales for Indiana swimming, though? That's what I want to know.
I'll get down to that and report back.
Let's go to Joe Smith for an update. All right. Eric, thank you. Sean will join me in just a moment. It is 6 o'clock at WSBT South Bend.
Celebrating 25 years on the air, this is Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader.
Notre Dame is moving on to the Elite Eight. Taylor, he stopped! Notre Dame wins!
Luke Leitner and Small Bone have been the catalysts for South Bend St. Joseph's.
Jalen Smith verbally committed to play football at Notre Dame.
And Notre Dame is going to Omaha for the first time since 1957.
Rebound, run the wall, middle. Score! Congratulations, Tom, on the championship.
Thank you. We brought one back to South Bend, finally.
Ryan Newman, Roger Penske, win the Daytona 500.
Leiner going to try to sneak it ahead. Touchdown, SC!
Can't express how sorry I am towards Matt Tyne.
And the White Sox have won the World Series.
I don't pay a damn bit of attention to what people on the outside say, because I understand none of them, though.
York now. In front, Ogilvy. They score! They score! Notre Dame to the Frozen Four!
The Colts of Indianapolis win Super Bowl 41.
The Fighting Irish are national champions in 2001. Notre Dame! Notre Dame! Notre Dame is the national champion!
Is that the play that will seal the playoff bid for Fighting Irish?
Here are your hosts, Darren Pritchett and Sean Stiers.
Sean is in our WSBT studios. I'm Darren with the South Bend Cubs in Burlington, Iowa. No baseball tonight. A rainout. We'll play two, weather permitting, tomorrow. 6 o'clock first pitch, 5:45 pregame on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. Sean, how are you?
I am doing well. I guess I'm doing well because I'm inside, because it is pouring down rain once again outside. You've got the rain there, and we've got it here as well.
We actually, the entire drive this morning from South Bend to Burlington was rain, but it has stopped raining within the last hour and a half, but just not playable. Absolutely not playable. It was a downpour all the way here, and there's a chance for rain tomorrow and Thursday, so we may not play any baseball over the next couple of days. Well, Brian Driscoll from Blue and Gold Illustrated, blueandgold.com, joins us Tuesdays at 6:05 when we don't have baseball that cuts our show short, which has happened a lot, it seems like, lately. And, Brian, I'm not going to bury the lead. I'm going to be a good journalist because, as you are a Cincinnati Red fan, Nicholas Peter Senzel is going to apparently be called up to the Cincinnati Reds on Friday for a matchup against the Giants, the number two overall pick in 2016 out of the University of Tennessee. I saw him several times against the South Bend Cubs playing for Dayton. Started the year injured, six games at AAA, 296 with a 345 on base, a home run, two RBI. So how in the world is this going to improve the Cincinnati Reds short-term and long-term?
Well, short term, Scott Schebler's been pretty terrible in center field as a hitter. And look, the moves they made this offseason from a pitching standpoint, you know, Sonny Gray's pitched very well. He's the best 0-4 pitcher in baseball. Their bullpen's been good. I really like what they're doing pitching wise, but they're losing games 1-0, 2-1, and they just don't have enough in their lineup right now. Matt Kemp hasn't hit; he's out. Yasiel Puig hasn't hit, although he's starting to hit, you know, hit for a little bit more power. Jesse Winker's got eight home runs in April, which is certainly a plus. He's starting to hit the ball. He's been hitting the ball hard this whole time. He's just kind of had some bad luck. But if he can come in, get on base, they've had a hard time kind of finding those guys at the top of the lineup can consistently get on base. Joey Votto's not really hitting yet. So I think short term it's going to give him a little bit of a juice if he can hit offensively. Long term, it's about finding the position. But, you know, just long term this season, get him into the lineup. Scooter Jeanette's going to eventually come back at second base and give you some power there. So if the pitching can keep doing what they're doing and the lineup can at any point in time just start giving them some runs, like we saw last night with the Mets, against the Mets, then, you know, you've got to feel pretty good about, you know, where the Reds are headed the rest of the year next year.
Okay.
And I guess it's always good that even as disappointing as it's been so far, you're not the Miami Marlins. You got that going.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, absolutely. That's always a plus.
Well, Brian, of course, the NFL draft over the weekend and a lot of interesting things. To me, one of the most interesting things that happened, if not disappointing, is Tavon Coney not getting drafted. So just kind of your thoughts on that. What did you think when Coney went undrafted over the weekend?
I was a little surprised. I think when you look at Tavon, I thought his production and his ability to play the run, I thought some team would take a chance on him in the 5th to 7th round as a two-down linebacker. I didn't think he was a high-round pick. I saw some mock drafts that had him in the 3rd round. I just didn't see that on film. I don't see the athleticism and some different things. But I was a little disappointed for him. But I think it's an example of, you know, you can't just become a high-character person in your last year and expect teams to not know kind of what you were your first 3 years. And if you're not an elite athlete or something like that, it can prove problematic. And as you look at the draft, there weren't a whole lot of off-ball linebackers taken, and the ones that were top-notch athletes like Drew Tranquil in the 4th round.
Brian Driscoll from Blue and Gold Illustrated, blueandgold.com, our guest. You know, we've spent a lot of time talking about Miles Boykin, the unbelievable measurables. The combine was really good to Miles Boykin. He had a really good year for the Fighting Irish, and I think we've talked to you, Brian, about he had a really good year for the Irish, but some of these numbers just didn't get reflected on the field. I think we would all agree he still has a pretty good ceiling above him. He could still become a better football player. But when you think about Baltimore taking him in round number 3, I'm not saying he's a reach by any means, but isn't that the spot where the first 2 rounds you want to make sure you get starters for your football team, and the 3rd round you can start to take chances? Because to me, Boykin's still a little bit of a chance just because we have not seen the consistent high-level productivity on the field. Tear apart that argument.
I think that if you can get a high, I think third round is a great time to take some of that high risk, high reward.
Correct.
I think there's any doubt. I mean, I remember going all the way back to when Mike Shanahan was with the Broncos and he took Maurice Clarett in the third round. And he's like, you know, it was a compensation pick, I think. And it was kind of seemed like, what do I got to lose? It was like my late third round pick. If he pans out, I got a first round talent. If he doesn't, you know, and they ended up cutting him before the season started. No, for Miles, I think Miles is not a finished product yet. And look, I've made this argument before. I point to the Clemson game. And people say, well, he didn't play great against Clemson because he had X numbers. Well, if you watch the game and break it down from a scouting perspective, you see him beating Trayvon Mullen on a post route. You see him beating A.J. Terrell on a post route, but you see the ball not coming or the ball coming inaccurately. I think NFL teams saw that there was a lot of production left out on the field in instances that weren't because Miles Boykin left the production out on the field. I think Pro Football Focus had him down for 3 drops on 62 targets. That's a really good number. And when you look at he had double-digit contested catches, the NFL loves the back shoulder guys. I think he brings a lot to the table. He's got to get a little stronger. I think his body can still be developed, which is saying a lot considering how big he is. But I think he's got that ability. When you've got a young quarterback who's not known for passing or accuracy, and you give him a guy with a tremendous catch radius like Miles Boykin has, you give him a guy that's got some speed, a guy that's got some ability to work the middle of the field, he's going to be almost kind of like a tight end is for Lamar Jackson, in that he's going to be sort of that security blanket. Hey, you get in trouble, just throw a back shoulder to Miles and we'll be okay. So I definitely think that third round is where teams were going to say, hey, this guy's too athletic and had too good of a season. And here's the thing that we don't talk enough about Miles Boykin. He was one of the most clutch late-game receivers Notre Dame has had in a long time.
Very true. And he, Julian Love, Alizé Mack, any of those three could have come back to school for another year. When you look at those guys, could any of them, do you think, improve their stock enough to justify coming back to and playing one more year at Notre Dame?
Well, I think Alizé Mack had eligibility left. I don't know if he could have come back to Notre Dame next year. Right. I think both sides were ready to move on from that one. I think Miles Boykin made the right decision. Maybe he could have improved his stock, but there's no guarantee the way Chase Claypool played this spring that Miles would have been the number one receiver. And if you compare their numbers in the final 6 games of the year, Chase Claypool had just as good of numbers, and in some areas even better numbers than Miles Boykin had. And so he was already starting to become a little bit of Ian Book's top target. So I don't know if his numbers would have necessarily improved. Maybe his game could have improved a little bit, but I think the guy that had the most room to develop and improve is Julian Love. And it's not just draft status, but the reality is Julian's game is not a complete product yet. It's just not. And he's a guy that takes a lot of chances, which is works out. He gets a lot of pass breakups, but his footwork still needs room to improve. He still doesn't necessarily have great timing when he opens up on deep routes. We remember that against Michigan game. He was late transitioning against Nico Collins and got beat for a 50-plus yard gain. And when you look at his game, he's an off-ball cornerback in a league that wants guys who can come up and press and play man, and that's just not what he does. Troy Pride can do that. But Julian still had a lot of room he needed to develop his game, and I think that his production and his All-American status overshadowed what NFL scouts saw, which is a tremendous college football player that doesn't necessarily transition yet or doesn't project well yet to our game as much as people maybe thought he would.
Brian Driscoll from Blue and Gold, our guest. When you think about all the guys drafted, all 6, which one do you believe is set up for the best early success in the National Football League?
I think there's actually 2, and they're for the same team, if I can cheat a little bit. I think
you
Jerry
may.
Tillery and Drew Tranquil went to a really excellent spot for both of them from the standpoint of there's a need for a player with their skill set. The San Diego Chargers have excellent production on the edge. They have Melvin Ingram at end, Joey Bosa at end, Isaac Rochelle, former Notre Dame player, had 5 sacks as a rotation end last year. Their interior production against the pass game was almost non-existent. And you're going into a league that's going to have Joe Flacco, that's got Derek Carr, that's got Pat Mahomes. If you can't get after the quarterback, you're in trouble. And if you can only rush off the edge, then there's things NFL teams can do to sort of neutralize your edge. You had a guy like Jerry Tillery up the middle with his ability to rush the quarterback. He was graded out as the number one interior pass rusher in the country last year by Pro Football Focus ahead of Quinnen Williams. They desperately needed that, and he's going to have an opportunity to come in and play. But I think when you look at that Will linebacker situation on San Diego's depth chart, if Drew Tranquil can stay healthy and improve just some of those minor things that we've talked about him needing to improve, he's got an opportunity to not only become a special team starter, but he's got an opportunity to compete for playing time at that Will linebacker spot in their 3-4 defense. So I think those two guys went to the best places for them from a scheme fit, plus a where the roster is, they're going to have a chance to come in and play.
Now, both of you guys are Broncos fans, so Darren, you can chime in afterwards if you want on this as well. But, Brian, when you look at the Giants, possibly the most controversial pick, Daniel Jones from the Duke quarterback at number 6. The Broncos got Drew Locke, the Missouri quarterback, of course, in the second round. If Denver had been picking at number 6, is there any possible way that you would have wanted Daniel Jones there?
Well, no, because I don't think Daniel Jones fits what John Elway wants in a quarterback. If you look at who John Elway's drafted, he's drafted Paxton Lynch, he's drafted Brock Osweiler, big arm quarterbacks. He just went and signed Joe Flacco, another tall, big-armed quarterback. And they want to run an offense that's similar to the offense that they ran when John Elway was here, which is play action, throw the ball downfield, those type of things are what they want to do. And Daniel Jones is a guy that I like a lot, but he doesn't fit what they are looking for. And I think that's why he would not have been the pick. But that doesn't necessarily mean he's not a bad quarterback. He's a much better fit for what the Giants want to do.
Is he good enough, though, to justify the number 6 pick, considering that their GM is already talking about it might take him 3 years to develop?
I mean, to me, look, you got a chance to get a franchise quarterback, whether you think he's a franchise quarterback today or in 3 years, in a league where it's hard for teams to find a franchise quarterback. Yeah, it's a risky pick. I think there's two ways to look at it. From a value standpoint, it's not a great pick. You know, you're talking about a guy that's not Pat Mahomes. It's not Deshaun Watson. He's not a guy that's going to come in and necessarily run the show right away. But they don't need that. They have Eli Manning. It's like when the Titans took Steve McNair and they sat him on the bench and let him cook in the oven for a couple years. Well, that was what Steve McNair needed. And right. The Giants aren't going to win next year. I don't care who they drafted at 6. They're not a Super Bowl contender, right? They're probably a couple years away, so you have an opportunity to get a David Cutcliffe disciple who's won 2 Super Bowls to groom another David Cutcliffe disciple who has a lot of talent but needs time to develop. I think it's a good match if you can get past the value aspect of it, which is what a lot of people look at.
Well, Sean, I think Brian broke it down perfectly what John Elway is looking for. He's also, he likes those tall quarterbacks, too. And you think about Paxton Lynch and Brock Osweiler, taller quarterbacks, Jones 6'5", Locke is 6'4". You know, I don't think Denver would have taken Daniel Jones at 10. There was a rumor that they would have, and maybe that spooked the Giants. I don't know if that's true. Of course, there's so much in the silly season before the NFL draft, you really don't know what to believe. But I am not a draft analyst. I'm just a football fan that watches the NFL shows and breaking down what they say. I feel like Locke has a better chance to be successful than Jones, although Rex Ryan keeps calling what Daniel Jones, he looks like Peyton Manning, which, boy, if the Giants got that and they got Peyton Manning, then that pick's going to look awfully good. But I think there's some upside for Drew Locke. And with Flacco, they want their quarterback under center. They want that running game to get going. John wants that running game to come from the quarterback being under center. He'll use the shotgun, of course. But I think Drew Locke's a perfect fit for what Elway wants in Denver.
I agree.
Yep. Look out, Super Bowl in 3 years. I'm kidding.
But I do think Daniel Jones is getting a bit of a bad rap because I don't think people put enough emphasis on look who he played for and look who he played with. And I also don't think he gets enough credit for the athlete that he is. This is a kid who's rushed for, I think, about 1,400 yards and 17 touchdowns in his career. He's a very good athlete. What he doesn't have is he doesn't have that big arm, and he didn't have great numbers. And they say, look at Dwayne Haskins, and he threw 50 touchdowns and 8 interceptions. And I asked somebody on Twitter this. If you flip those two players and you put Dwayne Haskins at Duke and Daniel Jones at Ohio State, are we talking about Daniel Jones having mediocre statistics? No, we're not. And I love Dwayne Haskins, so I'm not taking a shot at Dwayne Haskins, but that has to be factored in. So, well, he didn't have great numbers against Clemson. Name me a kid on Duke's offense that would have been on scholarship at Clemson, because if they could, they'd be on scholarship at Clemson. And so I just feel like that is often lost in this discussion. But as a Bronco fan, I really like the Drew Locke pick. And look, there was a mock draft that I saw that had Drew Locke going at 10 and the Broncos trading up to get Dalton Risner.
Right.
So the fact that they were able to get both of those guys in the second round and add Noah Fant at tight end, as a Bronco fan, and Draymond Jones in the third round, I was thrilled. This is two drafts in a row.
I
think John Elway, who struggled with his drafts early on, has really nailed it two straight years.
Well said. Well said. Hey, I got one more for you, Brian, and then I'll let Sean finish up. Alex Bars signed as a free agent with the Bears, reunited with Harry Hiestand, Mustafa as well. But I'm going to focus on Bars. The injury really held him back. Probably a guy that's drafted if it wasn't for the injury. Do you see upside in Alex Bars at the next level?
If he can get back to 100%, absolutely. I think Alex Bars is a guy that was playing early in the season last year like a third or fourth round pick, if not better. The problem that he had is it wasn't just an ACL. It was he tore everything. And so it was a more significant injury than just a guy that, you know, has a PCL or an ACL tear. If he can get healthy, get back to full speed, he's a guy that I think can be an NFL player for a long time, whether it's as a sixth man that can play three different positions or as a starter. And I actually think Alex Bars has starting potential. And going to Chicago, he's going to a guy, he knows how Harry Hiestand coaches, he knows what the expectations are, he knows how hard he's going to be pushed. And it's a depth chart that, to me, is not going to be easy for him to crack, but it's one he's capable of cracking. So I think that was a very good fit. As a Bronco fan, selfishly, I was hoping he would look at Denver. but I don't think it's – I think he's really going to a place. He trusts the guy that's there, and he knows that Harry Hiestand is going to give him every opportunity to make that team. And if he doesn't make the team, it won't be because he didn't get a shot. It's going to be because he didn't play well enough.
Brian, I'm going to ask you this question, but, Darren, I'm going to ask it to you in rapid fire as well, so you can think about it while Brian's answering. Okay?
All right.
Okay, so, Brian, if you were building a college football team from scratch, what two position groups – would you start with? What would be your top priority? And then, would those two groups be different if you were building an NFL team? Go.
College football, defensive line, and quarterback.
Okay.
I think if you look at the NFL, it's the same exact thing. Defensive line and quarterback. Because if you have an elite quarterback, and there are very few, you've got a chance to be successful. And if you can get after the quarterback, which not a lot of teams can do effectively, then you've got a chance to be successful. And I think as we look at the NFL in recent seasons, teams that are successful are teams that, more often than not, unless they have a guy named Tom Brady quarterback, are teams that can get after the quarterback. What did the Seahawks do? They had a great front.
Yep.
Their great front made everybody else on defense better, right? And then they could run the football. But they really, I think to really take a franchise up, and when you say start a new franchise, we're probably not really good. I want a Hall of Fame quarterback, and I want a great defensive line. And I feel the same way about college football.
Okay.
Just look at Clemson.
All right. Yeah, no kidding. Brian, what's happening right now at blueandgold.com?
Well, actually, today we announced our two new hires. We hired E.J. Holland and Mike Singer to run recruiting at Blue and Gold Illustrated, so we're extremely excited about that. We completely revamped our staff, so it is a very exciting time at BGI. And starting tomorrow, we're actually going to start a promotion that is going to be a full year at Blue and Gold Illustrated for 50% off, plus you get a free T-shirt, a free Notre Dame T-shirt if you sign up. So keep an eye on my Twitter account at @BGI_CoachD or the BGI News account for that promo, which will start tomorrow. But I'm very fired up. We got two five-star commitments, and I couldn't be happier with where we're going at BGI.
Congratulations, Brian. BlueandGold.com for the latest Notre Dame information and to take advantage of that offer. Apologies, we kept you a little long. We had some in-depth conversations. We greatly appreciate it. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks for having me on, guys.
That's Brian Driscoll from Blue and Gold Illustrated. Now, see, your question, I have questions about the rapid fire because it's a little more complicated with Denver knowing we're a base 3-4 defense.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
I mean, I want my edge rushers, but they're not really defensive linemen. So
that's a good point. So where are you putting them? Are you making them linebackers or are you making them defensive linemen? That's a good point.
You'll just have to wait till rapid fire.
Okay.
I have to figure it out how I'm going to do this. All right, we'll take a timeout rapid fire next, 26 minutes after the top of the hour, WSBT. It is time for rapid fire. Darren Pritchett from Burlington, Iowa. Sean Stiers back in our WSBT studios. I'll let you take it away.
All right, let's start with a little NFL draft talk. I know you and Eric hit a little bit in the first hour of the show, but Notre Dame players like Tommy Kramer, Khalid Kareem, Julian Aquara, and Liam Eichenberg are showing up in first-round mock drafts for next year's draft. So Which of those four guys right there would you give the best shot to go in the first round? Or possibly, if you think maybe someone else has a better shot. But at least of those four, who would you give the best chance?
It's the guy I've loved the last few years, Romeo Okorah. If all of those hurries, some of those turn into sacks this year, he could have a huge season for the Fighting Irish. And with the NFL being a passing game, the need of edge rushers, guys that can harass the quarterback at the high level. You look at the top of the NFL draft, Nick Bosa goes, a guy that can get to the quarterback from the inside, Williams from Alabama. You had Allen, the outside linebacker from Kentucky.
Yep.
Can get to the quarterback. So those guys were going quickly. So my money is on Romeo Okorah as that guy.
Yeah, and I mean, from a percentage standpoint, if you were playing the odds, I guess, you might lean toward Eichenberg. He'd be a safe bet since Notre Dame has become left tackle U since Brian Kelly has been here with all the first tackles going in the first round. But Kramer, I mean, a really good guard, but he's a guard, and there just aren't that many guards who go in the first round. So that, to me, it leaves it to one of the two defensive ends, and I lean the direction you are with Okorah. Because, like, if you compared Eichenberg's first-round potential to Okorah's right now, I think Eichenberg has farther to go to get to be a first-round guy than Okorah does. Because of all you said, he led the team with 8 sacks as it was. He had 21 hurries last year. And if, as Brian Kelly said, if he has half of those hurries turn into sacks, he leads the nation in sacks. And Josh Allen, the guy you mentioned from Kentucky, second in the nation in sacks last year, and he went there high in the first round. So I'm with you. I would go with Julian Okorah. And I don't think it helps either that he has a brother playing in the NFL. That always kind of seems to sway some of these scouts and executives and stuff like that. Okay, so now it's time for the question I asked Brian. If you were building a college football team from scratch, which two position groups would be your top priority? And would they be different if you were building an NFL team? And before you answer the NFL part, Brian texted me after he heard you, and I think I agree with him. Miller and Chubb for the Broncos, I think those qualify. I would consider them defensive linemen since they're essentially edge rushers.
And I went back and just kind of relooked at Vic Fangio. He kind of runs a hybrid 3-4-4-3, so there's not always the same look, so I think I'll be able to modify my answer.
Okay, so college first.
College, I agree with Brian. I had quarterback and defensive line. How many times have we said a quarterback that is excellent can cover deficiencies for the rest of a college football team? Brady Quinn did that when the Irish went to back-to-back bowl games, the Fiesta Bowl against Ohio State, the Sugar Bowl against LSU. That defense was not very good. But Brady Quinn put the team on his shoulders and was very efficient and got them to those two games. And also, you got to go with defensive line. All you got to do is look at Alabama and Clemson the last few years, what they've been able to do. The Irish defensive line was very good this year. So I agree with Brian. I go quarterback and defensive line if I had to pick two to start out a collegiate team. In the NFL, I'm going to stick with quarterback. And I'm going to go with, again, however we handle this, I want guys to get after the quarterback. If you want to put them as defensive linemen, great, but Chubb and Miller, those are guys that I want to get after the quarterback. They're outside linebackers in the 3-4. You know, a guy like Chubb can put his hand on the ground in the 4-3. So I just want those guys that can get after the quarterback, and I'll just keep it generally speaking like that.
Rush the passer, guys. Okay. For college, my top position group would be offensive line, protect the quarterback, and run the football. And my second position group would be defensive line. So I differ from you guys in that aspect. And just what you're saying, get to the quarterback, disrupt the line of scrimmage. My third from the college side would be the quarterback. But I would start with both trenches, essentially. In the NFL, I would start with the quarterback. And then right behind that, I would have the offensive line to protect him. And then third would be my defense. I just think the NFL is more quarterback-driven than college football because, I mean, you look around college football, you can win national championships with guys like A.J. McCarron and Matt Flynn, who aren't necessarily star quarterbacks by any means. They've both had their cups of coffee as backups in the NFL, but not stars by any means in the NFL. So college, I would definitely start with the trenches. NFL, the quarterback, because it's so quarterback-driven.
If A.J. McCarron was the quarterback of last year's Notre Dame football team, do they beat Clemson? Do they have a better chance? Oh, let's leave it at that. Would they have beaten Clemson?
Good question. I don't think so. I don't think anyone was beating that Clemson team.
Okay. That's fair.
That's the problem.
That's fair. You need an elite quarterback to beat a team like that. So that's why I kind of lean that way. But you know what? I totally get what you're saying. So we'll just differ on that one.
Okay. All right. Next up, Indiana High School football will institute a mercy rule this upcoming season. Do you buy or sell the idea of a mercy rule for high school football in Indiana?
I'm going to show my age, but I left Taylorville, Illinois 20 years ago to come to South Bend and WSBT Radio and did Taylorville Tornado football. And we had the mercy rule in Illinois back then.
Did you?
In the second half. So I am absolutely in favor of it.
Interesting that it's taken this long for Indiana to get to it, but and just some general for people maybe who haven't heard this, once the spread of the game gets to 35 points in the second half,
makes sense,
then the game clock will go to a running clock with the exception of timeouts, scoring plays, or injuries. And then once the mercy rule is implemented, the game clock will not be able to revert back to standard timing, even if the deficit gets below 35 points. Once it goes to a running clock, it stays a running clock. So I think that's good. But like the games I did last year, we didn't have any big blowouts like that. But a couple years ago, there were. And, I mean, a lot of times you get some teams, their program is low on numbers. You got a lot of guys playing both ways, and they're just overmatched, and
sure.
I think injury becomes a big risk. So I think it's better for everybody. And I think it's worth considering for basketball as well if you get to a certain point and it's that lopsided.
I just have the injury concern in football.
Yeah,
I mean, it's obviously
so
a physical mismatch when you get to that stage where it's just an absolute blowout. Basketball, maybe not so much, but I think it's great for football. Glad that's coming to Indiana.
Yep, absolutely. Okay, fill in the blank. Fenway Park is slated to host a college football bowl game beginning in 2020, and that is blank.
Just another game that nobody will care about. There are only three games that matter now ever since the playoff was instituted, the two national semifinals and the championship. Okay, the New Year's Six, there's some good matchups there, but again, if you're not in the college football playoff, everything else is basically an exhibition that's a throwaway game.
Especially the lower tier bowls.
No question. You know, I mean, I think I read 65% of Division I teams will play in a bowl game now.
Yeah, and that there are 129 FBS teams. Yeah, and 66%. There are already 42 bowl games, so now you're going to have 43, which means 86 teams. And it's just, and by the way, this Fenway Park game, they still haven't named the bowl from what I've seen, but you're going to have Fenway Park and Yankee Stadium, and both of those are going to be ACC Notre Dame tie-in bowls.
Right.
That's going to be part of that whole tier. And it just, I agree with what you're saying. I mean, think about it. The weekly rankings, it's the top 25 every week, right? So now you've got 86 teams. So times, what, three and a half, more than three times the teams that you really care about in the top 25, all those teams are going to be playing in bowl games. And as you said, it's another bowl game that no one's going to care about, but just more programming to put on ESPN, I guess.
Well, they need to get to 64 so Illinois and Kansas can make a bowl game.
There you go.
Unless they're the 129 team, then the odd team out.
They should just play each other.
It'd be 128 versus 129, a play-in game for the final bowl spot. Perfect.
That's right.
Good
grief.
That's
right. All right, that's what we've got for Rapid Fire tonight.
All right, it is now 18 minutes in front of the top of the hour. Once again, no South Bend Cubs baseball tonight. Rained out at Burlington, so I'm on deck to go through the National League power rankings. One team dropped out of my top six. Is there a new number one? Sean took care of the American League last night. I'll talk about the senior circuit next. The Sports Beat continues on WSBT. I'm Darren Pritchett with the South Bend Cubs in Burlington, Iowa. Sean Steyer's back in our WSBT studios. And now, since you took care of the American League power rankings last night.
I did.
It is my job to now update my power rankings in the grand old National League. And I'll say this right off the bat. One team fell out, and that is the Washington Nationals. Their great third baseman, Anthony Rendon, just went on the injured list today with an elbow injury. And they have not been a very consistent team. They have the worst bullpen ERA right now in Major League Baseball and blew a 3-0 lead at home to St. Louis in the middle innings last night. So Washington has moved off my top six list.
All right, so let's start with your number six then this week. Who is it, Darren?
Their rival, the Atlanta Braves, move in. There were a couple of teams that could have been in this spot. I went with Atlanta, eighth in the National League with a record of 14-14. They are +5 in run differential in the National League. That's sixth best. But they've got some pretty good numbers right now. They lead the National League in on-base percentage at .355, second in slugging at .461, number one in OPS. Now, the ERA of their pitching staff is holding them back, 4.70. That's 12th in the National League. And one of their starters they were counting on, Sean Newcomb, is currently in the minors. The positives, the young pups are performing very well for Atlanta. Second baseman Ozzie Albies hitting .299 with a .359 on base, six homers, 12 RBI, three homers in the last two games. And Ronald Acuna Jr., the reigning National League Rookie of the Year, .277 the average, .397 the on base, six homers, and 18 RBI. So the Braves come in at number six, and I feel like they're better than that 14-14 record, but in addition to their bullpen, one more extra arm might help them a whole lot.
Yeah, I absolutely agree, and that's the big thing when I look at Atlanta. The lineup is pretty good, but they've got to get better pitching if they're going to be a real contender this year. So the Braves are number six. Who's your number five this week?
This team drops from 3 to 5, and that is the Milwaukee Brewers. They have just the seventh best record in the National League right now. It's 16-14. Remember the fast start they got off to. Mm-hmm. They are now -3 in run differential. That's eighth best in the National League. And an interesting stat, they're 12-11 versus teams with a winning record, so not bad. But you take a look at their on-base percentage. They're hitting a ton of home runs, which is great, but the on-base is down to ninth in the National League at .326. Mm. Their ERA is 13th best in the National League at .498. Taking that a step further, quality starts mean a pitcher going at least six innings, giving up three or fewer runs. Milwaukee has had only three of those so far this year. That puts a lot of strain on one of their strengths, their bullpen. So that's a huge concern. Now, the good news is they're number one in the National League in home runs with 56. Next closest, the Dodgers with 49. And one of the guys they signed to even lengthen that lineup even further is Yasmani Grandal, the catcher formerly of the Dodgers. He's producing very nicely for the guys from Miller Park. .281 the average, .356 the on-base, six homers, 12 RBI. So I pushed the Brewers back because, again, the concerns with that starting rotation.
Yeah, and they signed Gio Gonzalez a week or so ago. He had a solid start his first time out. But I just, what you said, the bullpen is already taxed. Josh Hader already with the issues, even though he has six saves. And they just, they can't keep relying on them the way they did last year, I don't think. All right, who is your number four this week?
This team moves up one spot to number four, the Chicago Cubs. The Cubs have the sixth best record in the National League, 14-12. All of a sudden, they're up to third in run differential at +26. Now, they are just 8-10 versus teams with a winning record. Six in the NL and ERA at 4.07. The rotation has settled in. Second in on-base percentage at .350. Love that. Remember, they were 2-7. Mm-hmm. They are 12-5 since, so they're coming on strong. The big three in the rotation, Lester coming off the injured list, .237 ERA. Hamels pitches tonight, .316. Quintana at .348. Hendricks and Darvish in the fives. But I think Hendricks for sure will figure it out. Darvish, you hope, will figure it out. Jason Hayward, is this for real? 77 at-bats, .312 the batting average, .433 the on-base, 5 home, 15 RBI. The outfield looks a whole lot different if that can even come anywhere close to what it is right now. I don't think anybody believes it'll stay like that, but if he hits .270 with a .330, .340 on-base, that would be great production out of Hayward, and it's fun to look ahead. We'll get our first look at Cubs and Cardinals for 2019. They will play at Wrigley Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, so the Cubs are number four.
Yeah, and it's interesting when you look at the offensive numbers. The top four OPSs for the regulars on the team. And I just scrambled it here a little bit. Hang on just a second when I sorted my stats. Javier Baez is second at 1149 behind Wilson Contreras at 1191. Jason Hayward, though, at 1030 right now. I mean, if Jason Hayward ends the season with an OPS anywhere around 900, I think you're probably going to be pretty happy with that. And, I mean, he's at 1030 right now. So it's pretty amazing who's doing the most damage for that team offensively currently.
If Hayward has a 900 OPS at the end of the year, Theo will be going to the blackjack table.
That's exactly right.
He's going to roll the dice a little bit and put a little coin on the table, see what happens.
The Cubs are Darren's number four team in his National League power rankings this week. Who's number three?
Philadelphia down a spot, third best record in the NL at 16-12, fifth in run differential, plus 14, and they're 8-4 against teams with a winning record, sixth in on base, seventh in ERA at 4.23. The additions have been great offensively. The on base of the additions, McCutchen 370, Romuto 345, Segura 405, and Harper 400. The one concern, can they get enough out of the rotation? And their ace, Aaron Nola. What? 5.68 ERA, a 1.58 whip. That is almost unthinkable, and you cannot imagine that will continue.
No, you wouldn't think so. But, I mean, Bryce Harper is paying dividends for them in the short term. That's a pretty good 1-2 punch they've got with Rhys Hoskins and Bryce Harper right now.
He's still striking out a lot, but he's getting on base. He's walking, producing some power. I don't know if he's worth the $35 million they're paying him, but he's getting on base is a pretty good clip right now.
That's right.
Except Trout.
Yeah, well, that's a valid point. All right, so who's your number two this week?
All right, this team moves up two spots from 4-2, and that's the St. Louis Cardinals. They now have the best record in the National League at 18-10. They're number one in run differential at plus 31. And they have a great record against teams with a winning record of 12-8. Now, the concern is the ERA, unexpectedly at 4.30. That's eighth best. The on-base percentage, third in the NL at 3.49. And the heart of the order is rolling right now. Goldschmidt, 270, 362, 9 homers, 19 RBI. Paul DeJong at short, having a breakout year, 342, the average, 400, the on-base, 5 home runs. And Marcell Ozuna, who embarrassed himself by trying to jump off the top rope and missing a catch in left field, 271, 364, 10 homers, and 28 RBI. So the offense is cruising. The strength was supposed to be the starting pitching. Michaelis is struggling. Wainwright has been pretty good so far, surprisingly. But they're going to have to add a starter if they're going to be a National League contender. But if the rotation gets better, how much better can this team get? That is a very interesting question.
I think there's a lot of upside there because so far, Michaelis has looked a lot more human than he did last year. He and Flaherty have given up a combined 15 home runs between them to date.
Mm-hmm. Flaherty, 7 shutout innings his last start. That's a good sign.
Yep. All right. Darren's National League power rankings, number 6, Atlanta, 5, Milwaukee, 4, Chicago, 3, Philly, 2, St. Louis. And the number 1 team this week is?
It's been the number 1 team the whole year. I'm sticking with the Dodgers, even though they do not have the best record in the NL. That's St. Louis. And the Dodgers were swept by St. Louis 4 games. I'm still leaving the Dodgers there. Second best record in the NL, 19-12. Plus 30 run differential. That is second. And 8-12 against teams with a winning record. Cody Bellinger, MLB record, 37 RBI before May 1st. He is hitting .434 with a .508 on base percentage, 14 home runs. They're fifth in ERA, and now Clayton Kershaw is back. That number will get better, and Walker Buehler has not hit his stride yet. The one drawback, former Notre Dame star A.J. Pollock, now a Dodger. He is going to be headed to the injured list. Yep. Infection in his right elbow, which has caused him problems for a long time. But it is the deepest roster in the National League. So I'm going to stay with the Dodgers, number one, even though they don't have the best record, and St. Louis swept them.
I mean, just look at the lineup of the guys you mentioned. That tells you everything right there.
That's my power rankings, and this is our final break on WSBT. Budweiser's weekday sports beat brought to you by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds. By Train Heating and Cooling. By the Food Bank of Northern Indiana. Hunger is a story we can end. Find out how at feedindiana.org. and by Lechleitner Door Sales and Service. At Lechleitner, they open all the right doors. Well, we might have rain again here tomorrow in Burlington, Sean, so I might talk to you. I may not. We're supposed to play at 6 o'clock, but no guarantees, so we might be talking after all on Wednesday.
Who knows? Mother Nature just doesn't want to cooperate.
No, it will not. This has been a very odd spring, to say the least. Well, enjoy your evening, and one way or the other, we will chat tomorrow.
Sounds good. Talk to you tomorrow.
All right. Thank you so much. Top of the hour, UIT South Bend.